tentatively. Slow hunt.
That's all right, the captain said with relief. It's even all right if you don't find anything.
Go now? Perry asked.
Yes, now.
The captain turned to go out into the courtyard and Perry and the dogs followed him. There were only 4 men out there today, which made sense considering that Perry was fairly certain the master had decided on this harebrained scheme, and the captain didn't expect to find anything. However, the captain had the sense to not put dogs that were starving out in the field. The helpers turned up candle marks early with the usual barrows, and the dogs were allowed a half-ration breakfast, while Perry was given a half a loaf of bread stuffed with cress and cooked pork, which he ate while the dogs were fed. Then they all headed out, through the city and straight out through the gate, which was perfect, since that matched Roya's instructions. When they reached the forest, the lead man of the 4 mercenaries gave Perry a sideways look, but Perry ignored him. He crouched down among the dogs and gave them their orders. Obediently, they spread out along the forest edge, noses to the ground, diligently hunting, then disappeared into the underbrush. Perry looked back at the 4 men.
Will they call if they find something? The leader asked.
Perry nodded and disappeared into the forest, following them. Of course, he knew they weren't going to find anything, and the mercenaries probably knew they weren't going to find anything as well. After all, they had been hunting all over these woods since the master got that burr up his butt. Perry was pretty sure they were going to go just far enough into the forest to find a good spot to lounge in and make themselves comfortable for the rest of the day, or however long it took the pack to make a circuit of the city. Well, this was just going to give him the best chance possible to find those firebirds without any interference. Once deep enough inside the forest, he gave the pack their orders to spread out and search in a big circle around the city, but join him when he called them. Obviously, he did not want a pack of dogs startling the firebirds and getting themselves, and possibly him, hurt. Once they were well on their way, he and Laurel made sure they were on the right path and then began a slow and careful approach. He remembered Arvel's story about his encounter, or rather, encounters, with firebirds. The male had been stealing small, fireproof, shiny, or bright-colored objects from a village on Arvel's circuit, and the villagers had accused a servant girl of taking them. It had been Arvel and Ryu who had traced the odd scent from the site of one of the thefts to the firebird's bower, where he courted his female. Arvel had shown the villagers what was going on, and the villagers had proudly protected the bower, collecting the occasional brilliant, fiery feathers the male dropped, and making sure to put out plenty of bright, fireproof, worthless things for him to take to build his bower with. Every couple of years, Arvel had taken the opportunity to check on the village, and for at least 20 years, the firebird had nested there faithfully, and they had protected the pair. To be sure, firebird feathers were incredibly rare and worth a small fortune, so it had certainly been in the villagers' interest to protect and nurture them, but nevertheless, it was still a good thing for them to have done. So Perry had a pretty good idea what he was going to encounter, and he knew he would have to somehow contact the birds before they saw him and reacted to him and Laurel, though they would probably ignore Laurel if they had ever seen Kyrie before. Then he would have to see if they were intelligent enough to work with. Then would come the last and easiest part. Trade them shiny things in return for working with the ravens to start small, controlled fires to keep the master and his mercenaries busy chasing shadows. And just when he was wondering if the firebirds had moved on, despite Roya's assurances that they weren't going to for at least a fortnight, he encountered 6 curious and very fiery minds. And to his shock, the 2 biggest and brightest sensed him, too.
Who? What? Where? Came the startled response. What want? Show yourself!
He exchanged a look with Laurel, both of them equally shocked.
What do you think? He asked the Kyrie.
I think we'd better, Laurel replied, before they come hunting for us.
18. He and Laurel moved cautiously toward the spot where, if Roya's instructions were correct, they would find the Firebird's current territory. It wasn't easy, Those berry bushes Roya had mentioned were brambles, which Roya had not bothered to mention, but which explained why the mercenaries hadn't spotted the firebirds. There was a way through them, but...
We're coming as fast as we can,
he called to the two adults. At least, he assumed it was the two adults.
There are a lot of thorns.
Rather than words, he got concepts.
We know, and this is how we like it.
Or at least, he thought that would be the right sense for what he was picking up. And as they made their careful way through the brambles, he had an idea. If he was going to prove he was trustworthy, it wouldn't be a bad thing to have not only Laurel, but another former Taladra's ally along. He sent his mind looking for the ravens and soon found them, and he asked if one or more could join him. They, of course, wanted to know why and what was in it for them, of course.
I'm meeting the Firebirds, and I don't want to be turned into a human torch.
He got a sense of,
Oh, those conceited bastards!
And they were definitely laughing at him. But two of them also agreed to join him, and before he and Laurel had managed to struggle into the clearing, they were following along, hopping from branch to branch of the brambles over his head. Arvel hadn't gone into a very long description of the Firebirds, only that they were really pretty, so he hadn't been sure of what to expect. But when he got into the open space and looked up at them, where the six of them perched in their nesting tree, they took his breath away. The male, of course, was the most splendid. He was about the size of an eagle, though he had a straight beak rather than a hooked one. The first thing you noticed about him, though, was the literal fire aura that surrounded him. He literally looked as if he were on fire. Only after you took that fact in did you notice he had a long, sweeping tail of about 8 low-bended feathers that his colors shaded from blue on his head to purple on his shoulders and rump, to red on his wings and tail, to yellow on his primaries. His eyes glittered at them. The female and the four youngsters were slightly duller versions of the male and had shorter tails.
Ye bring the troublemakers.
The male eyed the ravens, who looked right back at him with amusement.
They're my friends,
he said, not entirely sure they were going to back him up.
We are! We are!
They affirmed with laughter in their mind voices.
You come from evil place,
the Firebird continued. He took a deep breath.
I am with Roya and his herd,
he countered, projecting an image of the king's stag.
We want to rid the place of evil. Then you and your family could live here without fear of arrows and evil men.
The bird looked at him, first with one eye and then the other, as though he was not quite sure what to make of this peculiar human who could mind speak and proposed getting rid of other humans.
We help how?
The answer finally came, and he could breathe again. The Firebirds flew down out of their tree and stood on the ground in a small group, a little apart from the ravens, while he demonstrated what he wanted from them. The ravens and the Firebirds were gratifyingly quick at picking up exactly what he wanted them to do, and were just as keen as he was to not burn down the whole forest. He showed the ravens how to clear a fire ring down to bare earth, then how to build a starter fire, the kind with kindling at the heart and a cone-shaped starter fire of heavier wood around the kindling. The ravens proved very clever about finding sticks that were exactly heavy enough, then hammering at weak points with their massive beaks so they broke off to the right length. Then the Firebirds practiced snapping off just enough flame to light it without sending the entire construction up at once. The youngsters proved better at this than their parents, perhaps because they weren't able to muster much fire yet. When he was certain they could do exactly what was wanted, he called a halt to the practicing.
Can you see in the dark?
He asked the male. He got the equivalent of a snort.
Easily.
Then wait until after dark to light these.
He turned to the ravens.
Put the fires where they can be seen from the city. Lighting one or two a night, always in different places, will be best.
The ravens were absolutely entranced with this idea.
Look for us,
the one that seemed to be serving as the de facto leader said to the male Firebird.
That's where the stick piles will be. We'll be nearby. We want to see the fun when the men come running out of the evil place.
Because of course,
the female Firebird said, but she didn't seem put out.
You are troublemakers.
However, she also didn't see the point, and she turned to Perry.
This makes evil go how?
It makes evil look for where we are not, he replied. We need the evil to be confused, because he is very strong.
Oh!
Exclaimed the female in sudden understanding, although she didn't elaborate.
So evil thinks enemies in forest?
Right. Enemies he can't find or catch. The male appeared to be pondering this.
Crazy makes him, the male cautioned. Dangerous, maybe.
We'll have to take that chance, Perry said. He's already dangerous. The firebirds all nodded, heads bobbing in perfect synchronization.
Do this, we will, the male agreed.
This'll be fun!
The ravens were very enthusiastic about the plan.
Want to see them come running?
Laurel decided to put his two coppers worth in finally.
We have sent to find Teledras, but we need to keep the evil confused and looking for things that are not us until the Teledras come.
The female tilted her head, and to Perry's mind, she looked skeptical.
If they come,
she corrected.
Teledra's not here in long, long.
If they don't come, we will find a way to remove the evil, Perry said, with a confidence he in no way felt. The male and female firebirds put their heads close together for a moment, and Perry understood they were talking to each other in private. The male turned back to him.
Wood burns, he said flatly. City is wood. City burns. Evil burns.
Oh, great. Now the birds wanted to burn down the entire city.
Probably. But let's not risk that yet. You could set fire to the whole forest. And then where would you be?
Forest not burn,
the male said with complete confidence.
We not let forest burn.
Perry just blinked. So they thought they could control an entire burning city? He didn't want to test that.
Let's just make him think there are enemies he can't find. That may make him tired, fighting shadows. Tired is weak. And weak is easier to kill.
For a moment, but only a moment, he was appalled at himself for thinking that last. But then he reminded himself that the master had already murdered many people, had enslaved, or effectively enslaved, those he'd left alive, and had done worse than enslave the women he'd kidnapped. The birds and Laurel certainly didn't seem to have any problem with the idea of killing the master.
Agreed, Laurel replied.
Agreed, for now.
The birds were a tougher nut to crack than Laurel, but at least everyone was satisfied with the current plan. Now that everything had been sorted out, Perry stood up to go.
Thank you, friends, he said, steeling himself for the difficult task of getting out of the bramble thicket. Thank you very much.
Do not scratch out your eyes on the way out, the male firebird said sardonically, which actually made him laugh a little.
I won't, he promised. Hoping getting out was going to be easier than getting in. When he was a reasonable distance from the brambles, he sought for and found the dogs. All they had found was a lone sow and her piglets, and since he hadn't said anything about not hunting, they'd surrounded her, killed her themselves, and had a second breakfast. Now they were eager to get back to the kennel and nap, and about a quarter candle mark later, they had caught up with him. Meanwhile, Laurel had found where the four men who were supposed to be hunting interlopers were actually lounging about, waiting for the dogs to find something. In another candle mark, Perry and the pack had made their way there. They all got up when the pack made its appearance, and the one in charge turned immediately to Perry.
Nothing?
He asked.
Perry nodded. No smell, he said. No track.
I thought this was a fool's errand, the man in charge muttered, then raised his voice. All right, you lot! The master might argue with us, but even he can't tell a dog that there must be a scent when there isn't one. Back to the compound.
About time, I'm starving, complained one. This idea was as daft as dog boy. If you ask me, the master's jumping its shadows.
The one in charge gave him a sharp look.
Watch your complaining, he warned. No telling whose eyes the master is looking out of.
The man blanched.
Didn't mean no harm, he said uneasily. Just the... We've been out here all day.
The one in charge nodded and motioned for them all to move out. Perry and the dogs brought up the rear this time.
No telling whose eyes the master is looking out of? That's something more to tell father.
Mags could do that himself, of course, and Perry and his mother could both see the world through the eyes of any creature whose mind they could contact. His mother called it mind riding, though Perry had never really liked that name, but he had never been able to think of a better one. He wished now that he hadn't taken on the persona of the daft dog boy. He couldn't ask questions now without betraying himself, so he just led the pack along behind the rest as they made their way back to the city in the compound. But the moment he set foot in the city again, he noticed a change. Before, it had seemed as if there were a presence or presences behind all those blind windows, watching. Now it seemed as if something had roused those presences, and they were not at all happy about the interlopers in their midst. If he had looked up and seen angry people glaring at him, he would not have been at all surprised. And he wasn't the only one to feel that way. The men at the gate were uneasy and kept glancing back into the city, and as soon as they set foot on the main street, the four men with him took on the same air of unease, peering up at the buildings or down intersecting side streets.
"I don't feel anything," Laurel said in answer to his unspoken question. "But I am not human, am I? I think this is aimed at humans, people who don't belong here."
Certainly the dogs weren't at all disturbed, trotting along calmly, giving no indication that they sensed anything at all, much less something wrong. The sensation of being watched by something hostile only grew with every step they took deeper into the city.
"What happened? It wasn't like this when we left this morning."
Could the master have done something to trigger this effect? The men, who had been walking quite slowly until now, began to speed up, until by the time the entire group reached the gate to the compound, they were all moving at a brisk trot. Perry was as relieved as the rest of them when the gate slammed shut behind them, and the strange sensation of being watched by hostile eyes slowly faded. Whatever was going on out there in the city, it wasn't affecting anyone in here. Or at least, it's not affecting ordinary people. Since no one said anything to him, he ran the dogs over to the kennel, and since it wasn't time for their evening meal, and they'd already helped themselves to wild pig anyway, he turned them out in the yard. They hadn't been running the way they had during the real hunt, so they still had plenty of energy to lope around the yard and play. He was thinking about what he should do next when the captain appeared at the door of the kennel and on seeing him, called to him.
"Dog boy! We need to go to the big house and the master. The master wants to see us now."
Oh, bloody hell.
His heart raced in panic. That was the very last thing he wanted to do. What if his outer mind slipped? What if the master pressed him again? What if the master suspected him of being the cause of whatever it was he had sensed out in the city and out in the forest? He couldn't, did not dare allow the master to get close to him again, and he didn't have to fake feeling terrified. He stiffened and shook his head wildly.
"No! No! Master hurt dog boy!"
He backed up into a corner and braced himself there, his heart pounding like a drum at a village dance.
"No big house!"
"The master won't hurt dog boy again," the captain said impatiently. "Come on! We must go to the big house now!"
"No!"
he wailed, and he projected his fear into the pack until all the dogs came running in from the yard and stood between him and the captain, growling. The captain took a step back at that and looked from the pack to Perry and back again. Clearly, he had no idea what to do next. Obviously, the master had ordered him to bring Perry. Just as obviously, he wasn't willing to brave the angry and defensive dogs, and he couldn't order the pack shot. The men needed them too much. Perry had no intention of going anywhere near the master, and he'd do whatever he needed to do to keep it that way. Once was enough. Never again.
"If he gets inside my head again, I'm dead."
His mouth was dry and his palms sweating, and the dogs were getting more agitated with every passing moment. The captain finally swore and stalked off, and Perry slid down the wall and sat on the floor with his arms wrapped around Laurel, sweating all over now so his clothing was sodden with fear sweat. That's where he sat until the helpers came with the dog's dinner. That was when he noticed there was one less helper. After darkness fell, he had a good wash to get all the stinking fear sweat off himself. Then once he was clean and in clean clothing again, he crept out of the kennel and went in search of the captain. As he had expected, he found the captain with some of the men in the tack room where he had been before.
"And he's on some kind of a tear,"
the captain was saying.
"I haven't seen him like this since he kidnapped us all and brought us here.
Perry made a slight sound, and everyone looked up and straight at him in various postures of alarm until they saw who it was.
Dog boy bad,
he whimpered as the captain stared at him.
Bad dog boy.
As he had hoped, the captain softened.
No, it's all right, dog boy, he said. You were right to be afraid. Come here.
Perry crept over to the captain and sat at his feet like a dog himself.
There, now, see? We're all friends again, the captain said soothingly. You tell your dogs we're friends.
Friends,
Perry repeated obediently. He actually thought about licking the captain's hand like a dog, but he decided that would be overplaying his hand.
So, what'd he say?
One of the men interrupted.
Well, he didn't like it when I told him the dogs found nothing out there, and he kept ranting about there being enemies in this city. I finally told him what Dog Boy said about there being spirits out there, and he just stopped. Just froze so long, I thought he was godstruck.
Captain, have you been out there lately?
One of the men asked.
What another spirit. But there's something in this city, and it don't much care for us. It's like thousands and thousands of eyes just staring, angry. This place wants us gone.
Well, when he snapped out of his fit, he started ranting, said that the White Riders were responsible for all this, that we had to get our hands on one and his horse too. I told him I'd never heard of no White Riders, and the boy stationed down at the inn hadn't told me about no White Riders, and he said he was going to start sending us east, patrols of us, until we found one and brought it to him.
Perry stiffened at that, but the captain didn't notice.
Did he say why?
The man that had spoken up asked.
Said that the White Riders were the key to everything. That once he got hold of one, he'd be able to do anything he wanted to.
The captain shook his head.
Oh, I don't know what he could do that he can't do now. Truth is, I'm scared to find out.
That's dafter than dog boy,
the man replied.
What the master said, not you being scared, Captain.
He might have said more, but at that moment, they all heard the sound of running feet coming toward this building out of the darkness. Then another of the mercenaries slammed into the doorpost, panting.
Captain! There's watchfires in the forest!
What?
The captain leaped to his feet, sending Perry tumbling.
Arm yourselves! On the double!
Perry scampered out of the way, then slipped out of the building in the confusion and ran to the kennel, just in case the captain might decide to use the dogs. But evidently that didn't occur to the man. Or maybe he didn't want the pack running around on the loose in the dark, because he and the now armed men charged right past the stable, making for the gate on the double. They still hadn't returned when Perry felt his father's touch on his mind, and he quickly unburdened himself of everything that had happened.
What's going on with the city?
He asked.
Is that something you or Roya did?
It's not us, Mags replied.
I don't know what it is, but Perry, I want you out of there now. I don't like what you just told me about the master. Not at all. And you're right. You don't dare get into his hands a second time. Things are cascading out of control. If they take you out for a hunt, run. If they don't, I'll come for you. But I want you out of there before 3 more days pass.
Not half as much as I want to be out,
Perry replied, trying not to sound as frantic as he felt.
But Father, he knows about Harold. Even if he doesn't know about them by name...
I've already warned the ones on circuit in this area. They're all taking shelter at guard posts.
Perry hesitated.
Father, if he can see through the eyes of his men, and if he was powerful enough to take over the entire company when they were 3 days' march away from here, I'm not sure even being with the guard is going to be safe.
Neither am I. But one problem at a time. Stay away from him, Perry, and keep those shields up. I love you, and I'll get you out of there.
And then his father was gone. The captain and his men returned before Perry was able to go to sleep. He heard the men trudging back to their improvised barracks, though not one of them spoke. He peeked out of the kennel, and their posture was that of exhaustion. He went back to his bed. He must have drifted off, because the next thing he knew, Laurel was nudging him awake. It was still dark, but he could tell by the sudden draft that the kennel door was open, and there was a light at the door.
Dog boy?
The captain said, holding the lantern over his head and peering around.
Dog boy,
he replied, standing up so the captain could see him. The captain moved over to his stall and sat down on the stool Perry kept there. Perry sat down on his bed.
Dog boy, You said there were spirits in the forest.
Perry nodded warily.
Have they come into the city?
Now that was a question he hadn't been prepared for. He shivered and stuck his finger in his mouth.
Now how the hell do I say I don't know without looking less daft than I want to?
Fortunately, the captain solved his problem for him.
So there is something in the city, but it might not be the same thing as in the forest.
He nodded. The captain sucked on his lower lip.
All right. Thank you, dog boy.
Perry expected him to get up and leave, but he didn't. Instead, he remained sitting there, and after a moment he began speaking again.
The master's in a rare taking. We found watchfires out in the forest and not a sight nor sign of who made them. And he keeps insisting there's something in the city, and all we can find is dust. Your dogs routed out nothing. But I can feel it, and so can most of the men. And now you...
He sighed and shook his head.
The master's up to no good. That is, he's not been up to any sort of good ever, but...
He paused for a moment.
There's daft, and there's evil. And there's daft and evil. I'm thinking he's both. And he's about to crack, and I don't know what he's gonna do when he does.
There was a long silence then as Perry sucked on his finger and looked up into the captain's face. And he knew this man had gone along with the kidnapping and worse of perfectly innocent people, but it was hard not to feel sorry for him. And maybe he and his men had just been picked up and swept along by this terrible force that was the master, and they were no more to blame than a log swept up in a flood is to blame if it hits someone and kills him. The captain sighed again and patted Perry's head.
And you can no more understand what I'm saying than one of your dogs, can you, lad? But there's some comfort in saying things out loud. And at least I know the master ain't spying on me through your eyes.
Master bad, Perry said tentatively.
The captain patted Perry's head again.
Master very, very bad. Master is the worst person I've ever encountered. And that's saying something.
They sat there together in complete silence for a very long time. The captain brooded, his face in shadows, inscrutable. Perry would have liked to have gone to sleep, and probably could have, and the captain wouldn't have thought twice about it. But he felt that he didn't want to leave the man alone with thoughts that were surely dark ones.
But he couldn't help it.
He kept yawning hugely. After the third time, the captain roused himself from his thoughts, patted him on the head again and stood up, taking the lantern with him.
You're a good lad, dog boy. Better than many men I've known. Get some sleep, and let's hope the master doesn't break out in some new outrage in the morning.
He left as abruptly as he had arrived, and at this point, despite the fact that his nerves were stretched to the breaking point, Perry was so tired he fell asleep. He woke when the helpers arrived. Two of them. He didn't say anything. But the missing one today was the one who had been the dog master. The dogs noticed and made circuits of the yard and the kennel looking for him, until he finally gathered them all together and managed to convey that the former dog master was dead. Dogs understand death, though usually only if they see that death in front of them. Normally they only understand inexplicable to them absence. But Perry made it clear enough to them this time. And they understood it enough to all sit down at once, point their noses to the sky, and howl out their grief. That thoroughly unnerved the other poor helpers, who went out into the yard to nervously clean up the latrine corner and fill the big water troughs out there. It also brought one of the mercenaries running. He looked around in bewilderment at the howling dogs, at Perry with his arms around Laurel, and the expression on his face turned from alarm to baffled confusion. But he didn't get a chance to say anything to Perry, because at that exact moment, there was another commotion from the big house, and he turned to see what it was. Perry hushed the dogs in their grief, trying his best to reassure them as he went to the door to see what it was, and felt as if he had suddenly been dropped into an icy river. The master had come out of the big house. He was carried in a sedan chair on the shoulders of four stony-faced men who may or may not have also been mercenaries. They might have been some of the men who had been kidnapped. The only thing that Perry was sure of was that they were certainly under his mental control, for they showed absolutely nothing. No fatigue, no interest in what was going on around them, no resentment at being forced to carry the master as if they were slaves, nothing. The captain came running as the master waited in the yard with an air of impatience, and something it took Perry a while to identify, and when he did, he was struck dumb with surprise. It was fear. The master, who could take over an entire mercenary company with his mind from 3 days' march away, was terrified. The captain ran past the kennel, panting, and stopped just short of the master's chair.
"Sir?"
he said, snapping to attention.
"At your command, master."
When the master spoke, instead of the menacing purr his voice had held the last time Perry had seen him, he was shrill, and his voice shook with anger and terror.
"I want every man here, inside these walls! I want the gate locked and barred. Nothing comes in. No one leaves. Now!"
"Yes, sir,"
the captain snapped and turned to his men, who stood there in a kind of disbelieving paralysis.
You, and you, down to the gate. Bring the men back on the double. You and you, get ready to slam the inner gate shut and slide the bar as soon as they are inside. Move!"
The five men he had singled out broke into a run. The master watched them for a moment. Then, the men carrying his sedan chair turned it and marched back to the big house. The captain stood where the master left him, staring after the man. Finally, he shook his head.
"So it's a state of siege against invisible enemies now, is it?"
he said to the empty air. And he turned and headed back toward the barracks and the kitchen, presumably to consult with the cook about rationing.
"Well, this is interesting," Laurel said. "I will need to find a place where I can dig under the fence."
"Is it possible to find a spot that's hidden in here?" Perry asked skeptically.
"I think so. I'll just have to be extremely careful about..."
Whatever Laurel had been about to say, Perry would never hear it. Because at that moment, that sensation of being watched by thousands of hostile eyes came back, except now it was here, inside the compound. And he wasn't the only one to feel it. All around him, he could see the men looking startled or glancing around in a panic or just holding very, very still, as if by doing so they could escape the wrath of whatever it was that was glaring at them.
"Well, this is different,"
Laurel said calmly.
"I feel it too."
"You do?"
"But not as if it's directed at me. I just sense a general hostility. Indulge me a moment and try something."
Perry turned his head slowly to look at the Kyrie.
"Try what?"
"Talk to it."
Was Laurel insane?
With the master awake and paying attention? Have you lost your mind?
"The master can't read animal mind speech. Use that. Talk to it like you'd speak to the dogs, in feelings and pictures. Tell it you're not a part of any of this, that you're here against your will."
Laurel's tail swayed a little, encouragingly.
"The worst that will happen, after all, is nothing."
"All right,"
Perry said with extreme skepticism, and he tried to broadcast those extremely complex concepts in the simple forms of emotions and images. Finally, he closed his eyes to concentrate better. After a while, as sweat began to prickle his scalp, he felt whatever it was slowly turning to focus all of its attention on him. And then, as he repeated his images and feelings over and over, including memories of the master trying to turn his brain inside out, suddenly it was as if someone had completely cut off a stream of water. He opened his eyes, a lightness coming over him as he realized that he was no longer the target of that terrible regard. He could still sense it, but as an observer, perhaps the same way Laurel sensed it. He looked down to see Laurel looking up at him expectantly.
"It worked," he exclaimed.
"I thought it might," Laurel replied. "I don't know what this thing is. I suppose it is something like the soul of the city, or maybe a sort of Vrondi. But the longer the master has been here, the more it has been rousing. And now the master has done something to awaken its wrath."
"Blood magic?"
Perry asked.
"Some particularly bad blood magic," Laurel confirmed. "And if this felt uncomfortable for us, I do not think I would care to be the master right now."
19. The oppressive tension continued to build over the compound. The mercenaries huddled together in uncertain groups, as if afraid to face the unrelenting pressure of the presence alone. The helpers got the dog's evening meal as usual, then instead of staying to clean, headed for the big house and disappeared into it as if they had been ordered there. Perry retreated back into the kennel and closed the door as the last of the men that had been recalled from the main gate and from patrolling the wall closed and barred the gate into the compound. His helpers did not reappear, and he had the sinking suspicion he was never going to see them again. Gazing at the big house through the cracked door, he thought he knew what had finally awakened the presence and aroused its ire. The master might be insane, but he wasn't stupid. If you are going to use blood magic to raise a lot of power in a hurry, it isn't your servants who are going to be sacrificed, or your soldiers. It's those who are the most expendable. People you can do without. Prisoners, in fact, and those who won't be missed. The cripples. The kidnap victims who might rebel are certainly expendable. And I haven't seen that boy in the last couple of days. He closed the door, but closing it did nothing about the images moving through his mind. It made him physically ill to think that all of this could be his fault. If he hadn't decided on his own to find out what was going on, the master wouldn't have gotten it into his head that there was something spying on him. Things would still be the same for the people who had been here. Maybe life was horrible for some, but at least they were still living. If he'd just obeyed orders, they might still be alive now. He thought that working in Haven's poorer quarters had inured him to a lot, but the thought that the master must surely have slaughtered all of his kidnapping victims by now, and that he might be to blame for that, had him rattled. He was just glad the presence had decided to leave him and Laurel alone. If he'd had to cope with that feeling of guilt and the smoldering anger of the presence, he wasn't sure he'd have stayed sane. But if it was my fault, would that thing have sensed that? Surely it would have. Surely it wouldn't have decided to leave me alone. He wanted to believe that, but could he? It made him want to open himself up to the thing out there again and confront it, ask it if he was to blame. And yet at the same time, he knew he couldn't, wouldn't do that, because he couldn't handle the answer if it was yes. He sensed the terrible regard of the being out there pressing down on everyone in the compound except for himself and Laurel. He knew the mercenaries were close to snapping, and he didn't want to be visible if one or more of the men broke under the strain. True, he could not possibly be blamed by anyone for this unknown thing out there, pounding everyone with its anger, but under that onslaught of anger, people were not going to act rationally. He was not one of them. He was a stranger, and alien, even inferior, and he was smaller and weaker than any of them. And that made him a potential target regardless of logic. As the sun dropped, the tension rose, and he wasn't immune to it. Although he was no empath, nor a human mind speaker, the emotions of fear and dread were so prevalent out there that even the dogs sensed them. They milled unhappily around the yard, clearly not wanting to go out for their usual run, too restless to stay put and too upset to work off their energy and play. Finally, darkness drove the dogs inside the kennel, where they lay down in small, panting groups, unable to sleep. Outside the kennel walls, flickering torchlight blossomed, visible over the top of the walls around the yard. He paced inside the walls of the kennel, as restless as the dogs, until he couldn't bear it any longer. He had to look and see what was happening out there in the courtyard. What he saw sent ice up his spine. The men, all of them as far as he could tell, stood in motionless, scattered groups around the compound, holding lit torches. He shaded his eyes with his hand so that he could look closer. The faces of the nearest were utterly blank, but their eyes held helpless terror. There was only one thing that could mean. The master had taken control of them. Probably the only reason Perry had been spared was because the master needed the dogs, and to have the dogs, he needed Perry, needed him free and able to act normally. The dogs wouldn't obey commands if he didn't act normally. Somewhere near the front of the compound, he heard shouting. It was too far away, with the big house between him and the shouter, and the voice was too uncontrolled for him to make out the words, but it was clearly the master, shrieking incoherently at someone. No, not someone. Something. The master shouted at the presence, probably daring it to do more than just glare at them.
Something is about to break.
Laurel came up alongside him, ears pointed at the noise.
I think the master might have been goaded into action. Be ready. This might be our only chance.
He nodded. Laurel was right. The only question was, chance for what? To escape? Or a chance to eliminate the master? Was it even possible to get near someone who could control an entire mob of people when he chose? Even as he wondered that, the master's voice rose an octave and his words became clear.
Go!
He screamed.
Burn it! Burn it all!
And now the men moved. And as the two men nearest it unbarred the gate and the rest began a stumbling run out into the night-shrouded city, the master's voice broke in the laughter of the mad. Roya's watchers had come running that afternoon with the news that the master's fighters had abandoned their posts at the gate of the city and left those gates standing wide open. Mags, Dalin, and Roya had raced to a spot where they could overlook that part of the city where the gates were, and now that they were here, it was clear that something very strange was going on. Mags felt a very real and very powerful presence looming above him, one not unlike the presence that inhabited the Haven Hearthstone in the basement of the palace. Except this presence was much more awake than that one was. And where the entity in the Hearthstone was unemotional, this one was nothing but emotion, and that emotion was rage. And even as he wondered if his mere existence out here had somehow called up a sort of Vrondi in response to his wishing he could do so, Roya's words in his mind told him he had guessed wrong.
It's the spirit of the city, Roya said. I have heard of such things, but I have never seen them. It has been roused by something, and what roused it has enraged it.
The entity's attention was concentrated inward, not outward, so at least it wasn't them it was angry with.
Something the master did? He hazarded.
Likely, Roya said shortly. It is letting its anger be known, concentrating its rage on them. I would not wish to be standing in the master's place right now, or that of his men, to be honest.
He tried to imagine what it must be like having that white-hot glare of anger concentrated on you, unable to escape it, and the first thing that came to his mind was that his son was out there, under it.
Perry,
he thought with alarm. Immediately, and trying not to panic, he sent his thoughts flying in the direction of his son, in flagrant disregard of the fact that the master might detect him. But Dalin and Roya had already anticipated that was what he would do, and they shielded him until he touched Perry's mind, found him unhurt, though unsettled, and knew he was all right. He removed himself without contacting Perry, withdrew behind the shelter of his shields as well as theirs, and looked soberly at Roya.
What have we done?
He asked, not at all rhetorically, because he was pretty certain that this had been their doing, even though he wasn't sure how.
Goaded the master into something he would have done anyway, Roya replied, sounding very sure of himself.
He glanced at Dalin, who nodded.
We did nothing to rouse this creature. It awoke because of something the master did. I think we can both guess what that was. Blood magic requires blood and death, after all. I suspect the thing was already awakening the first time the master murdered someone for his power. Now the master has killed not one, but several victims, and the entity is fully awake and outraged.
All we did was hasten what the master was going to do anyway, Dalin confirmed. Roya bobbed his head.
We are now in the unfortunate position of having to react rather than act. Tempered by the fact that the master will not be acting on us, he'll be acting against the entity, so whatever he does, he won't be ready for what we do.
I just want to get Perry out of there, he said desperately.
And this will give us a chance to do that, Roya stated. But we will need to be ready to move as soon as that chance presents itself.
For the first time in a very, very long time, he felt absolutely helpless.
We don't know anything about magic. We don't know this place. We don't know what the hell is in that city, and I've never gone up against someone who is a stronger mind speaker than I am.
Nothing in his own training, nor in those borrowed memories of the sleep givers, seemed to apply here. To be honest, he was terrified and completely out of his depth, and for a moment he felt himself flailing. Then he steadied himself. The master wasn't ready for them, and there were three of them to his one. Dallin and Roya were powerful in their own right.
"We'll improvise," he reminded himself. "I'm good at that."
But to do that, he needed to see what was going on.
"I think we should move into the city," he said finally. "We can't do or see anything from here."
Roya considered that, his tail switching restlessly. Finally, he nodded, though with obvious reluctance.
"I think you are right, but I don't like the idea of being pinned in by all those walls."
"I don't blame you," Mags replied, mounting Dallin.
They had been in such a hurry he hadn't bothered to tack Dallin up at all. Dallin wasn't wearing a saddle, but that had never mattered that much, and it wasn't as if a companion ever needed a bridle. Really, saddle and bridle were for the convenience of the herald, not the companion.
"We should go slowly and carefully," Dallin cautioned. "They might be waiting in ambush just past the gate. If you probe for thoughts only a little ahead of us, you should be able to find anyone lying in wait without alerting the master."
He nodded. "Right. Sprint across the empty space. We'll take cover just inside the gate and I'll look ahead."
He hunkered down on Dallin's back, and the companion leaped into a gallop, with Roya barely a nose behind. Once inside the gates, Roya shied off to the right while Dallin jumped left, both of them ending up peeking around the corners of the buildings that stood just inside the entrance. But there was no one in sight, or within a limited range of his mind speaking, and, briefly, peering through the growing shadows as the sun sank lower to the horizon, he had the dizzying impression that he was looking into one of those places where mirrors were set up to reflect each other into infinity. Every building looked exactly like every other building. This wasn't illusion caused by shadows. The buildings shimmered with a dim silver light of their own, the last of the sunlight reflecting off their walls. He made out each identical building clearly. It was disorienting. It looked nothing like any city he had ever been in before.
Artificial. Where are the shops? Where are the inns? That should be the first thing a visitor sees to a city. This looks like a city that was built by someone or something that had never seen a real city before. Someone who only knows a city is made up of buildings.
Well, that was going to make sneaking through it more challenging. He dismounted.
"Follow me," he said to Roya and Dallin. "This could get interesting."
Sneaking with a companion and a Daihili was definitely a challenge. His initial thought was to take to the area behind the houses and tiptoe along the alleys, only to discover there wasn't any such area. There was nothing like a yard immediately behind the building, only a bare width of ground about as wide as a man was tall, and the space that separated the buildings side to side was even smaller. There was no back door and no alley, which gave him the impression that whoever had built the city had also never seen a house before.
This was like a child's dollhouse in a toy city, never meant for use.
This place looked like a city, and the buildings looked like houses, but neither were suitable to actually live in. Or maybe what had lived in them was nothing like a human.
That doesn't matter. All that matters is figuring out how to use this as cover.
He considered their options, all the while acutely aware of that entity. If he closed his eyes, he could picture it, a great, shadowy, amorphous thing with a strange, blank mask for a face, looming over the city and staring down at the center of it with hatred, hot enough to set the buildings on fire.
More than anger now.
Hatred had been added to the anger, a righteous, burning hatred that must sear the soul of anything sensitive enough to feel it. The image persisted after he opened his eyes. He glanced up, half expecting to see the looming shadow over his head. Nothing was there. No hint of darkness against the cloudless sky. Nothing for it, then. He followed the path that Roya, who had an excellent nose, sniffed out for them, slipping from building to building and pausing frequently to check the vicinity for the minds of anything human. They didn't reach the site of the inner compound until dusk, where they were confronted by the closed and barred gates. So far as he could tell, without alerting the master, all the mercenaries had taken shelter within the compound, frightened out of their wits. Or perhaps the master had called them back to protect them against the siege of something that wasn't using conventional weapons. The three of them looked at each other. Then both Roya and Dallin wordlessly looked to Mags for an answer.
"We fall back a little," he decided. just to where we can still see the gates, and we wait to see what happens next.
It wasn't a good strategy, but it was the best they could do. And so they waited, aware mostly of how silent it all was, aware of the looming, ominous presence that seemed unaware of them as the sky darkened and the night came on. And all too close was the mind of the master, burning with rage, convulsed with fear. Although Mags did not try to read him directly, he sensed that the master had tried and failed to grapple mentally with the entity, and that it had flowed away from him like so much water. The master had never encountered such a thing before. It terrified him even as it infuriated him.
"It terrifies me," Mags thought. "What is this thing? And if it's so angry with the master, why doesn't it do something besides glare at him?"
Not that the glaring wasn't effective, in its way.
"And the Vrondi back in Valdemar can drive a mage insane just by staring at him."
"I suspect the empathic projection of anger is how this thing attacks," Roya suggested. "It's not physical in any sense we recognize. It can't attack directly. This might be all it has. But I cannot imagine trying to weather this for an entire evening, much less days or weeks."
Already Mags felt impelled to run into the middle of the road and shout impotently at the thing, and he wasn't the focus of its power. And the entity certainly showed no signs of tiring. It might be able to do just that. Continue the barrage of anger and hatred for days, even senites at a time.
Could the master withstand it that long? Could his men? Can Parry get out somehow while they're occupied with each other?
The sound of a voice screaming broke into his thoughts. Though muffled by the fence, the words were clear enough.
"Come out, you coward! Fight me! Show yourself!"
Followed by a string of profanity.
"Stop hiding, you motherless bastard! Meet me face to face!"
Though Mags had never heard this voice before, it was clear who it was. The master himself. It held equal amounts of anger, fear, and arrogance.
"I don't know what he expects,"
Roya said dispassionately.
"The thing doesn't have a body, at least not as we understand the idea. How does he expect it to fight him directly?"
"I don't think he understands that," Dalin observed. "If our surmises are correct, and he literally believes he is consuming someone's mage power by consuming their flesh, he might not understand that something can exist independent of a physical body."
"All right, then. I'll show you. I'll burn you out!"
the master shrieked.
"Burn it! Burn it all!"
And a tremor passed through the shadowy presence, and the anger abated just a little. "Or," Dalin added, "the master has discovered that the creature is the city, and now the creature knows that he knows this." The bar on the other side of the gate scraped in its holders, and the gate swung open. A half-dozen torch-bearing men trotted through the portal, with more coming from behind. Mags, Dalin, and Roya shrank back into the shadows, but they needn't have bothered. One look at the men's faces showed they were staring blankly ahead, completely under the master's control and oblivious to anything but his commands. It took Parry a moment to realize that the master meant that literally, that he meant to burn the entire city down around their ears. He ducked back inside the kennel and gathered the restless and anxious dogs around him, then drove images and commands into their heads. Images of the city in flames, a wildfire, which every animal instinctively fears. And images of them running, escaping the city for the forest, and waiting there for him. He repeated those images over and over as the hounds whimpered with fear and distress until he was sure they would all obey him. Then he flung the kennel door open and let them loose with a single spoken, "Go!" Then he sent the same images into the minds of the horses, maddening them until they broke their tethers and broke down the doors of their stalls and one by one raced out the open gates. The dogs streamed out of the kennel, raced past the big house, past the torch-bearing mercenaries and out the open gates as the first of the houses just outside the gates blossomed into flame. The smoke blew in through the open gate as the master laughed. Firelight cast flailing shadows on the open gates as more houses went up. The wood must have been as dry as tinder.
"There! How do you like that?"
the master crowed.
"Threaten me, will you? I will bring you to your knees!
He's more likely to burn us all to a crisp, Laurel exclaimed. The fire's spreading by itself now.
Sure enough, there were flames showing about the fence from places where surely the men hadn't reached yet, and sparks being carried aloft by the wind that the fires themselves had created. Heat radiated from outside the fence, warm and getting hotter by the moment.
We've got to get out of here ourselves, Perry replied grimly, but without drawing his attention.
He looked about a little wildly, as if some sort of disguise would present itself to him obligingly. And one did. One of the mercenaries still within the compound stumbled toward him blindly, torch in hand. Perry tackled him at the knees, bringing him down. The torch rolled away, still burning. The mercenary got to his feet, oblivious, and stumbled on, but Perry had gotten what he wanted. The torch.
Run for it, like the dogs, he told Laurel,
and setting a blank look on his face, he trotted off clumsily, holding the torch aloft as the others were. Gusts of heat came at him from the direction of the gate, and now there were flames dancing above the fence halfway around the compound. He passed the big house and fancied he smelled blood and rotting flesh, and he wondered if it was his imagination. And there was the master, a torch in his own hand, staring defiantly upward and raving at something. Something that wasn't there except in his own imagination? Perry doubted that. He could feel the edges of the anger, now mixed with something else that poured down on the master.
Don't see me, he half-ordered, half-prayed. Don't see me.
He passed the master as Laurel dashed out of the gate. Elation blossomed. And was crushed as he felt the master suddenly turn his attention toward him and freeze him where he stood.
You,
the master shouted.
The dog boy. This began with you.
And the pain crashed down around him, felling him to the ground, the torch falling from his nerveless hand as he screamed in sudden agony, every nerve on fire with pain. The dogs, and then horses, poured out of the gates as fire sprang up in every building within sight. The pack streamed past the corner where Mags, Roya, and Dallin hid, but one of the blank-faced mercenaries trotted into their building, and they realized that in a moment their hiding place was going to be one more component in the growing inferno. And Perry was still in there. Mags swung up onto Dallin's back, and with no further thought for hiding, the three of them galloped up the street between buildings whose windows were sprouting leaves and tongues of flame, and in through the open gates. There they paused for a moment, trying to make out anything among all the dancing shadows cast by the flames showing over the walls. A wordless cry of pain rent Mags's heart, and instinctively he guided Dallin toward it. He barely registered his son, curled in a fetal position on the ground. He had eyes only for Perry's attacker, and he flung himself from Dallin's back with his hands outstretched for the bastard's neck. But the master saw him coming and evaded him, twisting out of the way like a half-spirit himself, and as he eeled out of range, Mags turned his fall into a controlled tumble, somersaulting twice before leaping to his feet and freezing as the master took control of his body. Only to see a white shape charging the master and lashing out at him with hooves that would have been lethal had they struck their intended target. But they struck a good length away, as if Dallin's eyes had tricked him. Dallin screamed with fury, dancing in place, raging until,
"Join me!"
Mags heard, and he joined with Roya and pulled Dallin into the meld, and the three of them pitted the full force of their combined minds against the master's. Fire roared all around them. Heat poured down on them. Sweat poured down his back and face and plastered his hair to his head. They stared into the master's mad red eyes, and he stared back at them, seeming to take strength from the inferno around them. They were locked in a mutual, deadly embrace. Mags knew that he and the others dared not turn their attention to escape, or the master would take control of them one at a time and force them to fling themselves into the flames. They could see that in his mind, but the master dared not try to escape either, or they'd crush him and bind him, mind and body, and drag him off to face justice. Deadlock. Literally. The longer the fires raged outside that fence, the likelier it was the flames would jump to the compound and they would all die together. Mags spared only a heartbeat to look for Perry and saw that he was not where he'd fallen, and that was enough for him. Perry was smart, and he and Laurel must have run out the gate, racing ahead of the flames. Laurel would get him.